from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Right before I turned the microphone on, Ursula told me no follow-up questions, so I will not be doing any follow-up questions. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning. No follow-up questions to that scenario. If you missed that scenario, make sure you listen to our podcast, which will be available shortly after the show today.
And that nice little Easter egg you dropped at the very end.
Yes, I was doing my best impression of a Taylor Swift Easter egg.
My buddy Susan in Everett has me cracking up. She says, I'm a bit troubled by that at times. My mind works a bit like G's. Wait, you're troubled by that, Susan? My mind did the same thing with the full spread. I'm a grandma, and that woman just flunked an IQ test. How is that photographer using photos in his private time? So if you missed that scenario, it was a good discussion that happened at 10:45 at the end of the show. You can go ahead and listen to the podcast. We would love it if you did that. Now, Ursula, you ready for agree to disagree?
Yes,
and there will be no follow-up questions to what you told us.
Yes.
Agree to disagree, brought to you by Guardian Roofing and Gutters.
One of these days, we just got to take off the gloves. Just really go at it.
Does the boss automatically deserve the perks? Costco has a new CFO, and he will not be getting a parking spot thanks to Costco's quirky company policy. So the way it works at Costco is if you want a parking spot, it's allocated on tenure, not seniority, which means that Gary Millerchip, he's the new CFO of a company with $50 billion in annual sales, has to park his car across the street from the HQ, something he revealed to the Wall Street Journal in a recent interview. Gee, does the boss automatically deserve the spot or the perks in the office?
No, they don't. And I think anybody that does that, see, that's why Costco be just, that's why they do so well. Like, to show love to tenure, to show love to people that have been there. So, for an example, if Roscoe has been with the company 25 years and the new boss of the company just got there 2 years ago, but the new boss gets to park in a spot called boss, and Roscoe, who's been there for 25 years, has to park across the street because he doesn't have the title next to his name. That's backwards. The boss should park across the street, and Roscoe should have premium parking because he's been there for 25 years. Show love to tenure.
I love the idea of showing love to tenure. And I'm going to guess that that is something that is welcomed by Costco employees.
The long-term ones.
But my question is, why wouldn't they already have some reserved spaces for their executives?
Why do
It's an egalitarian company, I guess.
Why do executives need premium spots?
You just said it's one of the perks. It is one of the things that it comes...
I mean, the salary isn't enough?
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't be whining about not having a parking spot based on,
salary. This is every job, right? Like, I go pull up to Alice's daycare, and there's one of the parking spots there that on the concrete, it says, the boss. I know who it's for. If you go to my church, there's a sign that says, for the pastor.
Wait.
You can go to a school for the principal.
And by the way, if a parking spot, look, let's be crystal clear, Ursula. If you park in a parking spot that's called the boss, you've got problems. There's no way in the world you should feel comfortable parking in a...
Does it actually say the words the boss?
Yes, in stencil outline. Yeah, blue paint.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
If that's not tongue-in-cheek and obvious to everybody that it's tongue-in-cheek, it just feels a little, ugh.
Do I have to take up for the bosses now? Absolutely they deserve it. They're the hardest working at any company. They're responsible for all the decisions, right? It is their butt on the line if things go wrong. So, of course, I happily park in those spots when they're open. Whenever the auction winner space is open at my son's school, I always park there, too.
Wait, time out. Don't do
what?
That.
Don't do that. Why?
Because they pay for that. And a lot of times, if you've auctioneered and been in these events, you know that those parking spots go for a lot of money. Ursula,
they really do.
You know that. Yeah. That's not cool.
It is absolutely cool because my kids attend a public school. And so that public school property is the property of the public. And so if you're going to auction off the primo parking spot at the very front of the building for the one person with the biggest checkbook in the community, I'm sorry. That doesn't fly with me. That's like saying only Jim's family can use the ball field.
You mean the money that checkbook goes to help out with other kids in the school?
Yeah.
I mean, Chef, we can do this all day long, but you're that parent.
Money that not only helps out the underprivileged kids.
Oh, my goodness.
There's no scholarships
at a public school.
Wait. Are you trying to say that money that's raised sometimes with these PTS?
Yeah. I'm stealing from underprivileged children now. Is that your angle?
No. But are you trying to say that none of the money goes to help kids in school, be able to go on field trips, be able to make sure
I have no idea how it's allocated, to be honest. Yeah, but I'm definitely taking money out of their mouth. I'm sorry. Speaking of putting your money where your mouth is.
I'm just curious, though. Are there any other parking spots, or it's just because it just bugs you that someone paid for that?
No, I mean, to be honest, the only times I go to the school is when it's off school hours and I'm, like, using the plate, so they're all open. I just park there. But I had to outrage you guys because I know you think that auction winners deserve the space. Well, just had to tweak you there. All right, speaking of, restaurant reservations, G, have become a hot new scalping market in places like New York. Apparently, there are some college kids who brag about making upwards of $70,000 a year by devoting hours of their week to snagging hot reservations at the hottest restaurants and then reselling them online. A, is this something you would pay for? And B, should this be legal?
Yes and yes. There sometimes are, when you go to... I'm at the age now, Ursula, when I go to certain cities, you hear about the restaurant, right? Like, hey, when you go, have you been to this city? Oh, when you go there, have you been to this restaurant? This is supposed to be the nice one. And then you try to go there and you can't get in because it's booked up. Because, duh, it's really good. The same way if someone comes to visit Seattle, there are some restaurants here that they can't get into, right? But they want to be able to. They're only here for a short amount of time. Would they pay a little extra to someone else that's saying, hey, I got a reservation for two. If you want it, you want to pay X amount? So, yes.
It just feels like a scalper. It feels like someone buying up the reservations, buying reservations and then selling them, essentially making this a place where only really people who have a lot of extra money can go. And I'm not okay with that. I think that's making it even harder. And I don't know how we can talk about helping people and people who we talk about the wage gap. We talk about things that are unaffordable. And yet we're going to support now something that makes going out to a nice place even harder.
Same way we support college, right? Like, It's unbelievable to be able to pay for these colleges or be able to do the things to get these scholarships to go to these colleges. The only reason why colleges continue to charge all this money is because there is a demand for it to get to these colleges. So I'm just saying
this is a great thing.
Someone buying out all the reservations so that they can make money selling reservations to people who are able to afford them.
Just to be clear, like, no one's gonna buy out the entire reservation book for a restaurant, but maybe you'll get, you know, five spots during the week. Apparently people will fake accents on the phone with the hostesses, and in fact I'm sure that there are a number of hostesses themselves who are doing this on the side. This completely makes sense to me, and I fully support it. Here's why. What you're doing is you're making a luxury good more expensive for people who can afford it. You have a poor person who's in college who says, hey, look, there's these people who will bang down the door of this place to pay $500 a pop for dinner. Is there a way where I could leverage that situation with a little bit of arbitrage and make some money off people who can afford it? Sure. Great. Go for it. This bothers me not in the least, because the type of restaurants that most of us want to go to either A, don't take reservations, or B, are not such hot and popping places like in one of the number one markets in the country. I just don't care. If you want to charge rich people more, great. Go for it.
You want to know what's really cool that I've been learning in the social media influencer world? And I don't know, you've probably seen it on TikTok. You ever seen some of these restaurants, like, you know, because some of these restaurants now are paying social media influencers to come in and do a video and kind of get the hype and, hey, go to this place and all that. I always like to see the places that get hyped up and like, oh, everybody's going there. That's the place to go. And then, like, after, like, a couple months, you're like, hey, how come everybody's not going there anymore? Because the one thing about the restaurant industry, I don't care what's going on. If your food ain't good,
it's true.
If you have to pay an influencer to promote your restaurant sucks.
No. I won't say that.
I will.
I don't really say that.
Like, honestly, but... I've gotten these pitches before when I worked. No, not paying you. Oh, I guess this would fall into the category of gross or not gross.
Apparently, 1 in 4 Americans do not wash their sports clothes after every use. So this is from a survey of about 8,000 Americans from Promo Guy. In Washington State is even worse. Only 46% of people in our state wash their clothes after going for a jog, you know, or hitting the gym. And they might do it after the second or third time. Ursula, is that nasty?
I don't understand. I think it depends on how much you sweat and how much your clothing basically absorbs or doesn't. There's certain materials that just don't absorb well or don't do well, and you can smell it. And if you have a teenage boy in sports, you know that there's just this certain smell. After football practices, oh my goodness, I could not imagine wearing the same thing over and over again without washing. Right. So it is gross. I would wash every single time.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people just don't
this is
smell.
This is a topic I did not want to disagree with you on. And I'm so glad we're on the same page.
Yes.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I want to share something. Like, my wife, you know how many times that she and I have worked out together? Zero.
Mm.
And there's a reason. And I've never really shared the reason with her. Like, when I'm in the gym,
you sweat.
I see couples that are working out, and I see it. I'm like, oh, check us out, and all this kind of stuff. I don't want to work out next to, because when I start working out and I start sweating, I'm not saying I stink, but I don't smell like I like to smell. You know what I mean? I don't have that fresh soap. Like, you know what I mean? So if I don't smell like that, I don't like the in-between. And I don't want anybody to do that. So anyway, back to the point. If you work out or jog in an outfit and then you are able to wear it the next day, I don't know who you are. You aren't human.
What are you talking about?
Can I also put another point in there, though?
What's that?
If you're sniffing your clothes and thinking, it's marginal, it's on the border between, yeah, I need to throw it in or I can wear it one more time. Please throw it in. Yeah.
Why are we so, like, germ phobic in this? Like,
it's not germ phobic, it's smell
phobic. This is not going to a two-a-day football practice type. Most people, they go for a jog, 20 minutes around the neighborhood, whatever. You throw the shorts, you throw the shirt on the chair, and then you put those clothes on the next day because you know why? Who are you trying to impress while you're running around the neighborhood? Who can smell you? And nobody's destroying a pair of clothes from running in 20 minutes.
Okay, first of all, yourself, that's like, that matters to me more than anybody, myself, so one. Two, you ever had a t-shirt or that you've worn a lot and you've sweated in it before?
Yes.
And then sometimes, like...
Even if it's gone through the wash, you're like, it still stinks.
Lillian does that to me all the... By the way, this is something she does do. So sometimes I'll grab a t-shirt, right, and I'll go to put it on, and she'll say, "Oh, babe, that smells sour." I'm like, oh man, but because I don't smell it, right? I didn't think about it, but she was able to smell it. That fear, because sometimes you've worn that shirt, maybe it's time for that shirt to just go. Because as soon as you put it on, your pheromones hit it, and it's just like, we go back to that funky smell.
How many times will you wear a pair of jeans, G, before you throw them in the wash?
I don't put my jeans in the wash.
Okay, ever? How many times will you wear them?
They go to the dry clean.
Before you dry clean your jeans. How many times?
At Tops, twice.
At Tops, but at most Tops. Of the time, most once.
Of, yeah, because most of the time I don't, you know, if I wear them one time.
Okay, how many outfits would you say you go through an average day?
Oh.
I'm just trying to picture two. Your laundry load.
I mean, on like, right now, two. On the weekends, three. That's normal. I mean, well, for me, like this outfit right here, and then I'm going to go do my errands. I'm going to hit the gym, and I'm going to come back.
Three.
So three outfits.
Okay. I think a pair of jeans at minimum twice. Easily, unless you got them all nasty. Three times is usually fine. You give me the stink eye right now, Ursula?
Yeah. I think we're wrapping up.
You're wrapping up. All right. Coming up here next, guess what? Jack Stein is going to join us. You know what? I like that. That's happening. Jack Stein is going to join us, and he's going to tell us why he's rejecting the dark side. I don't know what that means, but he's going to join us next. Gene Ursula.
And Ursula Show. And as you know, in life we have choices. You can do our best in the world or we can embrace temptation. And Jack Stein is here right now to explain why he is rejecting the dark side.
Yes.
We are going into this blindly, Jack. We have no idea what you're talking about, but I think I have a clue.
Well, so I did a commentary for the morning show, Seattle's Morning News, and I was talking about how recently on the Jack and Spike Show YouTube channel, we've been on the receiving end of a decent amount of negative comments, right? Because we talk about politics, we talk about government, and we talk about all these horrible, awful things. And some people have this impulse where they want to be as mean and as cruel and as negative as they possibly can in that very anonymous space where you're just typing out your thoughts and they'll make fun of our production or they'll make fun of me, my tattoos, what anything about me that they feel like they can attack. And I think that we as a society, like or even as individuals, we feel as if the way to respond to that is to be equally as negative.
Mm.
And then you get into a flame war in the comment section. So I thought to myself, in starting the Jack and Spike Show YouTube channel, what if in every comment that was negative that I happened to read, that I responded in the nicest, most thoughtful, almost grossly so. Do you know what I mean? Like almost to the point where it's like disgustingly kind to whoever it was. And lo and behold, what I found in that is when you exercise that muscle, all of a sudden it seeps out into other aspects of your life where you feel like you're being wronged in other instances. All of a sudden you're just nicer to people. I think that the temptation to use your ego to fight against another human being on the internet is what gives us the perception that we're divided as a country. But I don't think that we're so much divided as a country. I think we're just ruder as a country.
Or feel safer being behind a keyboard and thinking and forgetting that we're actually talking to people and someone is on the receiving end. The funny thing is, I know that sometimes I frustrate you with maybe how nice I am when I respond to some people. Would you say that?
No. I want to be specific.
Yes.
I only get that way when somebody was clearly like awful in a comment, and then sometimes when you're nice back to them, that's when I get frustrated.
Yeah. Oh yes.
I want to be very clear.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, so, but what I find is when they realize, wait a minute, I am actually talking to someone, then they kind of back down.
Yeah. What I found is, so a guy sent me this really, really mean comment about Monson, about, you know, he's like, Dory would have hated you guys. He didn't know that Dory and I had a personal relationship.
Yeah.
We spoke on, they had no idea, right? So he's like, oh, Dory would have hated you, and he's embarrassed that you're in that time slot or whatever it is. And so I wrote him back. I thought, that's so mean and that's so cruel. What can I say back to this guy so that he knows that I'm a real human being? And so I said, hey, man, listen, I appreciate your relationship with Dory Monson. I had a personal relationship with Dory Monson.
No one can replace him.
Right. And I went on to say, like, you know, we try our very best, and I apologize that it's not up to your standards. But I want you to know that if we met in person, you and I could probably bond over anything else other than politics. And I had gone through his search history, and I saw that he was a fan of bass players. And so I said, I'm a bass player myself. I have a 1962 reissue P bass that I'm sure that we could talk about. He sent me back a message within, I want to say, about an hour, where he said, hey, I'm sorry, man. I was just blown off steam. Isn't it so interesting that people are so reactive, and then the second that you come back at it with kindness, or as I like to call it, the good side of the force, that all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know what? Sorry about that, man. I was just a little heated there in the moment. I actually think you're a pretty cool guy.
Well, I love that. So how has that extended to other parts of your life?
Oh, man. I mean, for instance, Spike O'Neill forgot his phone today again for the third time in
weeks. Are you nicer to Spike? Because I know people are upset about... Some people are upset about how mean you are to Spike.
I don't think I'm mean to Spike. I think that he gets under my skin. But so Spike goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I got to go get my phone. Now, I know that Spike's wife has a health condition. He's got two kids that need his attention for emergencies. So I say, yeah, dude, go get your phone. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, I'll put the show together and I'll do 90% of the heavy lifting. And you just come back when you're ready to do it. I'm not going to hold that against him. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how that kindness is supposed to work.
It felt like kind of a backhanded kindness.
Yeah, that's what it is. Grossly kind is what I like to call it. I'm being grossly kind with it.
Let me ask you this. First of all, I appreciate you coming in here and explaining this, talking about the divisiveness that is happening. What's your opinion on those that have platforms that empower these folks to be that way? What's your opinion on those that have platforms and they have and go about these topics on a daily basis with anger as being the selling point because they know anger sales? What's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, I don't really like to mince words, but everybody knows if you listen to the show, I'm not a fan of Jonathan Cho. I think that he peddles in misery pornography, and I think that he's a charlatan and a grifter. I say that as a statement of opinion, not a statement of fact for legal reasons. But when I see that, I think to myself, when you're engaging in that business model, that is what I can be critical of. I don't know him personally as a human being. I'm sure if he and I sat down, we could talk about anything but media and we could find lots of things that we agree on. But I will be incredibly critical of when people's business model is to be cruel and is to be divisive and is to be intentionally rude and condescending. You know, like I saw a post the other day about that the officer who took his own life after kidnapping his son, and somebody wrote, the blood is on your hands, Democrats, or they did a whole podcast about how this is Democratic policies. And I just thought to myself, how, you know, that person to get to that point had to be on the receiving end of an unbelievable amount of cruelty. So me adding to that is not going to make them realize the error of their ways. I'm going to have to try to meet it with kindness. And so that's what I've been trying to do. Although I fail from time to time, I think that that should be the goal, is to just be as kind as you possibly can be.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you recognize that. I'm glad you recognize it, because I remember when I was first starting out in this business and people would tell me, well, those with a platform, they're acting that way, but they're not really like that off the air. To which I would say, so let me get this straight.
Yeah.
When you're off the air and you only are talking to very, like, 10 to 15 people, but on the air when you're talking to thousands, you're a certain type of way.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's better. Okay. But gee, you're new in this stuff, so you need to learn that this is just how it works.
Yeah.
And then you know what I've learned? I learned to just be yourself, because how I am on the air is how I am off the air, literally.
Yeah.
And you know what? It works, because I don't have to forget. But just remember this. When you open up Pandora's box like that and you take that toothpaste and you squeeze it out of the tube, you can't close it and you can't get it back in. Good luck.
That was my thought about it, man, is that there can't really, when you're a media person, there can't really be a difference between the way that you are off mic and on mic, because it creates a kind of a psychological dissonance, which is why when people meet me, they're always like, do you really feel that way about that thing? I say, yeah, that's how I feel about it. I'm not lying. I'm not making it up. You know, it's a healthier way to be. And I have a lot of empathy for people that feel like they need to be that character on air and then somebody else in their own personal life. Because I did that myself for many, many years, and it made me physically ill, which is why I don't do it anymore.
Well, Jack, we love this kinder side of you.
Thank you.
I love that you're rejecting the dark side.
Thank you.
And we look forward to hearing your show from noon to three today.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, we'll have your text messages, your feedback, and then we're going to have a fully clothed Words to Live By. We do that next. Gene Ursula. Ursula Show. Ursula, this show went by fast, didn't it?
It did.
Because you started off exhausted.
I did, because we had so much arguing during our pre-show meetings in the newsroom, and it just continued to spill in into the studio.
Yeah.
But you know what? It turned out okay.
Oh, it's turned out good.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Okay, Ursula, you want to start us off?
Yes. Yeah, so we talked about the crime report on Washington, which said that the state of Washington is one of the eighth on the list of most dangerous states based on crimes and the lack of them being solved.
Yeah.
480 says, as an officer, I will say that staffing is a huge factor in the increase in crime. We can't be as proactive in fighting crime when we can barely respond to inbound calls for service.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Tesla self-driving death with distracted driver that we discuss. Pops says, my Subaru has EyeSight, adaptive cruise control, which when used, I expect it will stop from hitting the object in front of me. I'm paying attention, but even so, I would have very little time to react if it fails me.
Rachel says, so what are the benefits of auto drive then?
Kevin in Seattle says, good morning. The idea that people have lost their lives because of self-driving cars is infuriating. I hope the families sue Tesla for record amounts. Sadly, that's the only way action will be taken.
And we've got a couple of these text messages that say the cameras on Teslas do not pick up motorcycles correctly.
Oh, and then, really? G got pulled over for distracted driving. Severine
admitted it, though. You're very open about it and said you've learned.
Severine and Pialop says, I appreciate you being honest with us, G. And I almost wrote this text while driving.
360, though, says, remember what you like to say, G. It's not the first time you've done it. It's the first time you've been caught.
Okay, 360, don't use my words against me. Pam says, hopefully G wasn't using the auto drive feature when he was pulled over. I wasn't.
On EV rebates, Mike in the 425 says, yeah, G, I make about $45,000. No way can I buy any kind of car, let alone an electric one. Matter of fact, I have medical debt, and I'm going to have to cash in some retirement to fix my regular car.
Ray in Bellevue says, the infrastructure can't handle it. Argument keeps getting repeated, but the energy providers are working it out and will keep up with the demand. Check out PSE's articles on their electrification plan. Has anyone not been able to charge their car to date?
How worried are you about retirement? I asked that question and said 0 to 10. 206 luckily says my retirement worry level is 0. I'm one of the lucky ones. As a retired civil servant, I have a six-figure pension that adjusts for inflation, health insurance, and seven figures in retirement funds. You are doing okay. These days, it's a completely different game, though, where people have to be their own retirement planners, and I don't envy them.
Robin Pialop says, why worry about something that isn't likely going to happen?
So Rob plans to work forever. TJ and Gold Bar says 10.
Oh, that's very simple. Scenarios. Who is taking the steamy pics of my wife and who will actually get to see them someday? This was a scenarios about someone, his wife going to get steamy pictures taken, and it comes to find out it was his friend and they were able to get it for free. 425 says, you're totally right. We found the album when we were cleaning out the garage. That person found an album of their parents naked and it wasn't good.
think a lot of people can have that as a shared experience. John and Monty Lake says, yeah, we found a photo of my grandma reclining in a teddy at about 85.
Man. 425 says, my first wife did this. Then she drew one of those pics in charcoal and painted herself on canvas. Now that she's passed, I've got these new artifacts. What am I supposed to do with them? Throwing them away seems disrespectful. Keeping them to myself is odd. Giving them to my kids is with, is out of the question. They're a curse.
Okay, and then on Costco's new CEO, who doesn't have his own parking spot, 253 says, the reason you give an important person a designated parking space is to value their time. They don't need to be looking for parking, the same reason the on-call trauma surgeon gets designated parking. They need to be inside doing their important work, not circling the lot looking for parking. But then there was former King County Sheriff John Urquhart, who texted in and said, quote, leaders eat last.
All right, let's get it. Words to Live By, brought to you by Wilcox Farms.
And just after our conversation with Jack, and I was thinking about compassion and having empathy, and this is a Brené Brown quote. Empathy has no script. There's no right way or wrong way to do it. It's just simply listening, holding space, withholding judgment, emotionally connecting, and communicating that incredibly healing message that you are not alone.
That's good. That's really good and very important about that message right there. Good stuff. Nick!
Well, draft day is upon us for the Seahawks and their crew, getting ready for the newly hired players they review. And like, gee, you maybe have some plans for going out to watch, whether close to home with family or a spot in town, top notch. But when heading out, don't follow in G's footsteps while you're driving, getting pulled over for any kind of reason before arriving. Life in the fast lane. I understand a car that's buzzing by to find their lady who agreed to take some photos with a guy who's looking shady. I just hope they weren't too risque in this case.
No follow-up questions?
I don't have
no follow-up questions.
I just leave a few Easter eggs and...
Ursula, what you doing the rest of the day?
Well, we have a company-wide meeting. That's one. So I'm going to be taking part in that.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much
I'm
are you...
I'm very excited.
Oh, so 10?
You're sure. Yes, I am. And then I'm going to rest because I stayed up way too late last night.
Are you lying to me?
Actually, we're going to watch the draft tonight, and my sister's coming over. Honey's coming over.
Okay.
With Walker, her boyfriend, and we're going to have pizza. Watch the draft.
Wait, you're not cooking?
No. Act shocked.
Hey, Nick, thank you for all
you
do,
brother.
Ursula, good show with you today. Tomorrow's Fresh Fridays.
I know.
All right. The Jack and Spike Show comes up next. Make sure you stick around. We appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. And as always, be kind.
Hope you have as much fun as we have. So long, everybody.